21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
It's all about soul. It's all about faith and a deeper devotion. It's all about soul. 'Cause under love is a stronger emotion.
Welcome to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Zohar Hieronymus. Laura Kortner is our executive producer, and Noah Dankner runs our board. Joining us this hour is Allison Stevens. Allison is the public relations manager for Heifer International. Heifer International's mission is to work with communities to end world hunger and poverty and to care for the earth. Their transformational model runs, quote, much deeper than providing livestock and agricultural inputs. They work with public and private partners around the world to put the entrepreneurial power of self-reliance in the hands of small-scale farmers by connecting them to markets and their local and national economies. Since 1944, Heifer has also provided the core lessons and social capital that build community unity, hope, and confidence for farmers once in need to achieve self-sufficiency and become donors themselves. Joining us this hour to talk about their programs, philosophy, model, successes, and they do have these 7 decades experience in the field, is our guest, Allison Stevens. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you. What a lovely introduction. Thank you.
Well, your website makes that just so easy for me. I can look around, see what you all do, and then put it together. And it's so beautiful. I've been such a fan of what you all do for years. And I know that Dan West was the founder and that he had this little bit of understanding back in 1944 about the difference between having livestock and not. So why don't we start a little bit with your founding back in 1944 or so?
Yes. So Dan West, along with his fellow farmers in Indiana, they really saw the need for improved livestock. They saw what a cow, our namesake, a heifer, could do to change a family, a community. So instead of providing essentially rations, a ladle of milk, they could provide a cow that would produce milk but also produce offspring. And so the idea of Heifer International was born from that. The opportunity to give a cow, and in this case a female cow that would bear a calf. And then he took that one step farther, which is really the genius part because it's so simple, but he suggested that all the participants that would receive an animal would then give the offspring of that animal, one offspring, to another community member in need, and therefore you leave a lasting legacy. And what we've seen in the current picture of what the passing on a gift looks like is one that it can take on the form of all kinds of animals, because of course we don't just place cows, we place anything from alpacas to goats to trees to seedlings to bees, but the continuation of sharing goes on, and we've seen it go from one generation to on average 9 generations, so
wow.
Well beyond the requirement, because people see how valuable and how transformative it is.
That's beautiful. And
it is.
One of the things about Heifer International that has so intrigued me is not only that, but this understanding. And I was looking at your 70th celebration party with the old cowboys and the few cow gals. And I think that that's worth talking about for a moment, because here we are. This was at the close of World War II. And these were young men mostly and some women who agreed to go with shipments of livestock on these boats across the ocean. And I was reading one of the stories by one of the men who's now in his 70s or 80s, he said, yeah, if you want an adventure where you got really sick and it smelled and there was manure every day and the cows were sick and we were sick, share with us some of this beautiful legacy.
We're so fortunate to bring many of the men and women who participated in that over their lifetime, but we were able to gather some of them together this past year. And just as you described, it was hard. You know, these men and women are, they still remember with great vitality and vivid memories how challenging it was to get these animals across the ocean. But what they also remember is when they were greeted by the farmers in which they were going to give the animals to, they got to look in their eyes. They got to see that these animals were going to be well cared for, and that the new families or the families receiving the animals were then their lives were changed forever. And that's really what a lot of them took away from it, is they got to hand over what would be the pivotal change in places that were war-torn and really devastated. So they were really proud to be a part of that transformation in a really, I guess, visceral way.
Mm-hmm. And I know during the holidays, many people, rather than giving a lot of gifts to their friends and family, as a family, they'll buy a flock of birds for a family, a flock of hens or two goats. Or how does the community, because I saw that you have offices in 30 countries and you work with many, many other nonprofits around the world, all who themselves are, independent legally, so it's kind of like a collective of loosely affiliated, well-meaning organizations. But how do you decide what will go where and how much goes into any one area?
That is a question that we really try and decentralize. So as you mentioned, we're very fortunate to have a lot of donors and investors who see the impact of our work and want to participate. So we've had great stories of families who will go through our catalog and they'll choose the animals together. And we've seen that from the individual level all the way up to the corporation or, major gift, where they do the same idea of, I know that my gift is going to make a change. But to your other point about how we convene people of like-mindedness in countries where we work, that's really important to our work. We know that sitting here in the United States, that we can't make those decisions as well as empowering the country directors where our offices are and their partner organizations. So we rarely have U.S. citizens as country directors or as folks in the staff. We want to employ people that are there and understand the customs, mm-hmm. culture, language. And so it's very important because they're building trust and relationships with these communities where a lot of people may have seen other NGOs come in or other goodwill organizations, but it doesn't work because maybe it's just trying to fit a round peg in a square mm-hmm. hole, if I may. Whereas we see some success or more success with ours because, again, we take the time to really invest in the communities, what their identifications of success are. We want them to participate in the project modeling and really to say, what would work for your landmass? Is it goats? Is it alpacas? Do we need to help with kitchen gardens? Because they're the ones, the heifer families that we work with, they're the ones doing the hard work. They're the farmers that till the land and rotate the crops and take care of the animals. So while we provide wonderful resources, we know it's their ingenuity and hard work that are going to make them successful.
No, it's a beautiful model, and I like the fact that the way Heifer International works with these communities and small-scale farmers, and many of them are women. I mean, you raise whole communities by giving them the ability to either have milk for their children or a small business because of it or having eggs. And when you see the small films you create and the beautiful change that something so small makes in a lifetime, it's very profound. I mean, I was reading on your website, Why Farming? So talk to us a bit about farming as this core approach.
Well, it certainly is. I think in the United States, we've seen a big trend on knowing your family farmer. And that's so wonderful because that connects us to the food that we're eating and the person or people that are essentially growing that food for our nourishment. And the same is relatively true for the countries that are, where we're in Africa or in Asia. It's a little less organized maybe, but it's the same idea of farmers markets and selling their surplus at, to their community friends. And certainly the most basic needs are feeding themselves, nourishing food, and providing that for their children. Going back to the idea of selling that at surplus or selling the surplus at markets, they're then able to take that money and invest it back in their family. So we have medical needs that are now being addressed. We have school needs that are being addressed. We have home needs. And that's really another important piece is Heifer International doesn't prescribe what those families should do with their resources. It's really indicative of the family and the community to put those resources back in. And if I may tell a quick story,
please.
One of the things that we see in Nepal in particular when you talk about women's empowerment is we organize or help to organize what we call self-help groups. And essentially, you know, we look at the power of many. So these women who have had very little and certainly no decision-making power are now banding together to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about just what the one family gets. It's about what the entire village needs. And so in Nepal, they really looked at resources for better homes. And they will lend money to women to, you know, improve their homes and then bring that money back into the self-help group. So they're even providing microfinancing to each other. And we see this in a lot of places. So it goes long, way, you know, away from the animal, even though that's what might have gotten it started.
No, it's a lovely model. And I was reading, I mean, when you look at some of the facts that Heifer International is so aware of, firstly, in 70 years, you've assisted more than 22.6 million families. That's 114.9 million people. I mean, it's such a beautiful thing to see what grew from one individual's good-hearted effort and then getting others like himself at the time to do the same thing, how this has just grown so beautifully.
It's remarkable as well as humbling. I've worked at Heifer almost 4 years now, and it's truly, I mean, it's a labor of love, and we're all very galvanized by the mission, and we know that each person here is making a difference because of Dan West. You know, we get to participate in ways that are really, they're very, they're just satisfying, and they are humbling and encouraging. And when you get to talk with people, especially those Heifer farmers, it's such a powerful interaction because they're people, we're also human. So, you know, if I'm a woman here in Little Rock, Arkansas, which is where our headquarters is, I have a lot of similarities with women my age in Peru, which is just a difference of where we live. So I think that's the most wonderful part about Heifer is we work with human beings that are so similar to ourselves and how resources and ingenuity and interest and intelligence, they do so much. It's very powerful. And Dan West, of course, he saw that. He knew it. He got other people to advocate with him. So, humble beginnings, but very powerful impact.
And it's such a simple notion. You know, there's a lot of solutions that people come up with to solve world hunger, and it's very sophisticated, and it requires a lot of capital in the millions, hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes of, you know, these mega farms and this and that. And I think the thing that has attracted me so much to Heifer International is that you've gone back to the basics of how human life has supported itself forever. And it's from the land with a reverent relationship to the land and the livestock and the community. And how do you all get your actual livestock, particularly if you're in poorer countries and their livestock might not be as healthy a stock? How do you get livestock from wherever you do to wherever it is you take it?
Well, that's a question that we get a lot. And the truth is that we get it as close to the project site as possible, but with the characteristics that you outlined, which is high-quality breed, because what we want to do is, have a strong animal, because that's what's going to produce well for the family.
So will Heifer, for instance, identify, let's say, a cattle farmer that's fairly large over in this area of Africa that you're in, and then ask if they'll donate or if you'll buy them? Or how do you go about doing that?
I don't know the answer to the first part as far as how they you know, what type of relationships that we farm or we build with farmers of quality breed. But I know that we purchase the animals.
I see.
So it's not always, I wouldn't necessarily know exactly what the farmer were to provide a reduced cost. But what you're capitalizing on is that we try and buy the animal as close to the project site as possible, one, for the local economy.
Sure.
You know, when you put money into the economy, it's going to have a nice effect on it. And then, two, the animal will have the best immunities for that local area.
For sure.
As possible, as opposed to transporting it.
For sure.
And what we see is that we work with the local community to identify maybe several people that become what we call community animal health workers. And so what that allows for is almost like a, not quite a veterinarian, because we know how much education that takes, but it provides a service opportunity for maybe, you know, kind of everyday, I'm trying to think of animal husbandry terms, but mm-hmm. the care and feeding of an animal and someone that you can, that the farmers can go to say, my animal has this problem, how do I take care of it?
Yeah.
So antibiotics. And that provides twofold. One is that the farmer doesn't have to always try and find a veterinarian, which can be very challenging.
And expensive.
And two, provides a skill and vocation mm-hmm. For you know, community animal health worker. So that's definitely one of our differentiators from some of the other people who are also doing livestock resourcing.
That's beautiful. We're going to take a break and then we'll be back. Our guest is Allison Stevens. She's the public relations manager for Heifer International. I encourage you to go to their website. They have these beautiful catalogs. There are ways whole groups can participate, churches, synagogues, youth groups. www.heifer.org. That's www.heifer.org.
Hello, this is Eric Pica, President of Friends of the Earth United States, and you are listening to the 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zahara Hieronymus. Friends of the Earth is an organization that champions a healthy and just world, and you can learn more about us at www.foe.org.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Our guest is Allison Stevens. Allison is the public relations manager for Heifer International, and they donate livestock, among other things, to end world hunger. Go to www.heifer.org and find out from their catalog and list how you can make a difference. I mean, for as little as $30, a family can receive bees. For $20, a flock of chicks. $150 a llama or $500 a heifer. And I saw that you have companies, for instance, how the people that work at a corporation will all get together and make a donation to Heifer International for whatever it is, whether it's a cow or chickens or goats or llamas, and then the company will match them. Share with us how they could do that, because there might be people in our listening audience with small businesses who go, that would be phenomenal to help a young family or a struggling family, you know, have some farm animals so that they not only can eat, but they can create a small business.
We are so fortunate. I am always humbled by the types of donors that we have. And as you mentioned, the matching donor program is really remarkable, as a lot of donors are very happy to participate in philanthropic efforts, and they want to hear from their employees who they want to donate money to. So that's really wonderful. And there's a place on our website, as you mentioned, at www.heifer.org in the partners area that talks about those easy steps to get your employer matching program up and going. So we try and make it easy, because we know that that people want to donate and participate in something like Heifer. So it's a really nice way in which people can participate and then have their gifts doubled. And we've even seen some of our partner organizations go even farther. Once they get to know us, they want to make generous contributions on their own as well.
Mm-hmm. And I mentioned at one point earlier before the break that you have these beautiful programs for churches and synagogues and youth groups, and these wonderful downloadable PDFs that literally walk. For instance, you know, a child that's having a confirmation, or somebody else who's getting married, or they're all different times of life passages where people choose to use that ceremonial time as a way to contribute somewhere else in the world. So share with us some of those beautiful stories.
Yes, thank you so much for bringing that up. We found that people really get Heifer International, and it's a nice way in which to bring children, especially younger children, to learn about how they can make a difference in their world. And so we have several different programs. One that you mentioned is through our help with faith communities, because we know that whether it be like Bible schools or bat mitzvahs, you know, those opportunities to really talk with children about how they can dedicate an important day to others around them to change the world. And then one of my favorite programs that we work with is a program called Read to Feed. And what we do is we work with parents or teachers, and we really hone in on a child's ability to read. And so they get sponsored to read books, and they can do it within their classrooms. We've seen entire schools dedicate themselves to it. And the kids really get behind it because they're reading for a good cause. And in the end, we've seen them raise anywhere from a couple hundred dollars to multiple thousands. And it's really, it's so humbling because these kids are, they're doing something that's great for them and great for the world around them. So we have both of those programs on our website.
So I didn't look at that one. So instead of, for instance, when kids do walks for something, they get sponsors for the walk or the jump roping, they get sponsors for reading. And then the money they raise from reading goes to Heifer International.
Yes.
Ah, it's lovely.
It is. And we've seen, it's fun to read some of the letters that will come through. As a person on the communications team, we try and cover as many different, you know, fundraisers or experiences from children. And it's just endearing, as well as really life-changing. We've seen, I've even talked with Heifer International colleagues, people who are on staff, that participated in Read to Feed as children and then visited one of our learning centers, of which we have two, one in the Massachusetts area and then one here in Arkansas. And those opportunities informed their vocation. You know, they did everything they could to come and work at Heifer International because they were so inspired as young people. So the Read to Feed program it's really great, and it can be well suited for elementary students and middle school students as well. So,
well, and as you point out, there's lots of ways people can volunteer. But before we come to that, I wanted to talk about something I didn't take the time to find on the website, but I remembered hearing it at some point, that you all have 12 guiding principles that actually serve as the foundation for what you call value-based community development. And this interests me. Maybe the 12 principles were there on the website, but I didn't download them, so I don't know if you have them. Can you go through those?
Absolutely. So what we call passing on a gift, we talked about in the first break, or before the first break, and those are the 12 cornerstones for our work. It informs our work. And passing on a gift, of course, is the opportunity to share the offspring of one animal. But passing on the gift also outlines our cornerstones, and I can show on the website where that is, but it essentially spells out passing gifts. And so we have accountability, we have sharing and caring.
Wait, don't go too fast, because I think the reason I thought this was so important is a value-based community can be shared regardless of one's religion, one's gender, one's nationality, one's socioeconomic position, because we're talking about those things that transcend all of those differences. And
yes,
you don't often, when people talk about city planning, you don't often hear somebody stand up, oh yeah, we're going to have value-based city planning. You know, it doesn't happen that way, unfortunately, but it should. Instead, the engineers get together and the architects get together and the developers get together and the builders get together, and it's all about the money and the contracts. And oftentimes what is not there when they talk about community development is exactly this, a shared value-based way in which one can bring harmony and peace and successful sustainability. So if you don't mind going through these slowly so I can hear them for the first time as well.
Of course. I'm sorry. Sometimes I get very excited because this is what we really think of as our secret sauce. What is the difference between the real transformative experience and just sort of handing off an animal.
Exactly.
So I'll go in order, which is the first one is passing on the gift, which we talked about. The second is accountability. You know, it's a shared commitment between us and the farmers, as well as the farmers to each other. sharing and caring goes back to that idea of sharing resources and intelligence, and what works for one farmer might be working for another farmer. The sustainability and self-reliance, which is really important about the caring for the earth. We want to do no harm. Improved animal management is I, and what that really goes to is how do we best take care of animals so that they can best take care of our families. Nutrition and income, we talked about that as the nourishing of the family as well as providing income resources for them to send kids to school. The G is gender and family focus, which I think you talked about a little bit with the idea of women's empowerment, but really about how the change in dynamic can better the whole family. So if the husband takes on a little bit and the children take on a little bit, then it's not so burdensome on the mother figure. The genuine need and justice is the second G. Then we have I is improving the environment. F is full participation, again, with the family as well as the entire community. T is training and education, so important. Once someone is educated and trained, no one can take that away from them. So while we have families that might see disaster, we work in areas in which they might be prone to natural disaster, we can go back and rebuild because that training has already occurred. And then the last is spirituality. And we're very aware of the fact that people, they are motivated and subscribe to different belief systems, and that is emotional for them. And so we want to work within all of those different spiritual feelings and emotions, because that can be a great motivator. But we don't want to prescribe anything.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds like, when you listen to NGOs who have not been successful, one of the reasons they've not been successful is they have gone into a place and tried to assert their will. I remember years ago talking with Tom Lovejoy, who at the time was with the World Bank, and talking about biodiversity, and we were talking about so many of the failed projects around the world happened because of this notion that one could intellectually figure out what some community needed and then go and do it and then build some infrastructure and then disappear. And of course, as you all know, and as everybody since discovered, it doesn't work. It's not sustainable. Nobody's empowered. And it basically becomes, as John Perkins, who I love his work, Economic Hitman, would talk about, this is just sort of the way we move stuff around the world without necessarily improving the place in which we've moved the stuff to. Whereas you all are really focused on the inner experience of each community member in relationship to the community, and that there's this full awareness that it's local and it's native and it's indigenous, and that those are the things that last.
That's absolutely right. You are so eloquent and articulate about our work. And one of the things that we also see is the time frame in which a heifer project occurs is long. We're at about 3 to 5 years of working with communities, and that does change over the time frame. A lot of heavy input at the beginning to talk about our cornerstones. There's a lot of training that occurs before animals ever arrive to a family.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have regular check-in periods where we're looking at different challenges that families could be facing or different successes that then we can apply to other families. And so then at the end of that 3 to 5 year period, they're in almost a reporting phase, and in that way we're still able to get information. And that's really also very important to our work is going back and doing some analysis on what's working and where we can improve.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at some of the points you all have pointed out of just statistics, more than 800 million people around the world don't have enough to eat. And when you discuss the factors contributing to poverty and hunger, these are the items you list: marginalization, gender discrimination, lack of access to resources and services, low income, and environmental degradation. Now, I've covered environmental degradation a great deal throughout my entire lifetime. Mm-hmm. How in these areas, particularly in all these African countries where there's so much civil unrest and just horrible violence, has this affected the communities you all are in?
Well, I have to say that we're very careful about where we work. We want to work in areas in which we're welcomed, and that there is a more balanced system. And we've been fortunate to see that when countries are working after a crisis, or as you mentioned, violence, we are going there to help mend those relationships. We've mm-hmm. seen people who have been fighting are now brothers in this farming and this training, and sometimes that really provides a unification of healing. So we're very careful about where we work, and we're very careful about, certainly our staff in harm's way. What I think we see more of when it comes to crisis is the environmental piece. So when you look at drought,
yeah.
or you look at, we had a typhoon hit the Philippines, which has been now the third year in a row. So we're looking at ways in which we can continue to help those families rebuild. But what we've found is that because of training from Heifer International and our partner organizations, the rebuilding actually happens faster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very encouraging. And one of the things I wanted to go back to as far as the number, the more than 800 million, it's quite a daunting number, but it is decreasing. In my time here at Heifer International, we've seen the World Food Program say that there are more than 870 million, and now that number has gone down. And our CEO is very adamant that every person that is working with and for Heifer International reminds themselves that our mission statement is to end hunger and poverty. And that end part, he wants to see that in our lifetime. And he's, as we all are, we're committed to the smallholder farmer in order to feed the world. And we truly believe that that's what's going to nourish us all.
I'm a big anti-GMO person, even though people tell me I should just promote the organic and forget the GMO fight. But I don't know. It's not my nature. I think that it's very important that people are aware of the bad decision making that's going on in agriculture, particularly in this country, whereas in Europe and many other parts of the world, they've outlawed genetically engineered food, period. It's not the same thing as hybridization and other things, because now we're inserting genes from different species into other species. And as we joke, it's not food, it's a pesticide. Like Roundup soybean is, it's not a soybean, it's basically a pesticide that we call a soybean. How does Heifer International handle any of this stuff, or is it so remote to the level of work that you're doing? Are people aware of this stuff? I mean, are these low subsistence farmers actually being approached to do GMO seed?
Well, I'm not familiar with our farmers being approached in that way. We certainly understand that we work in a very different context here in the United States,
mm-hmm.
most of which cannot be applied to the farmers that we work, especially because when we work with smallholder farmers, we're looking at small plots of land, somewhere around less than 5 acres.
That's a lot, actually, if you're doing it yourself.
You're absolutely right. And some of them are even on smaller plots of land. So, but again, we see a lot of people band together. So mm-hmm. one of my favorite stories is the idea of renting out your water buffalo.
Oh, beautiful.
They can till the land. But going back to the agriculture farming practices, Heifer International supports practices and technologies that are good for the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And our smallholder farmers are not... most of them are not equipped or desirable for some of the large-scale farming that we have here in the United States.
Oh, it's beautiful. So. And I look at what you all do as very stealth, even though it's very visible. And it's almost as if doing the most natural thing has the biggest wave and the biggest impact. It's just a beautiful success story. And I love being able to, promote a success story. But we have to take a break and then we'll be back. Allison Stevens is our guest. I hope everybody listening will take some time. Just give $20, www.heifer.org, and you'll contribute some chicks, which means some eggs, and then some other chicks for another family, and then more eggs. And then before you know it, you have a little eggs at the market. It's just a beautiful model of sustainability and longevity. Heifer International, HIEFER.org.
this is Cynthia Hart. I'm the caretaker of the White Buffaloes. Our website is www.whitebisonassociation.com. You are listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. And I thank you for having us on this show. It was fantastic and a wonderful time.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Allison Stevens is our guest. She's the Public Relations Manager for Heifer International. You can go to www.heifer.org, and you can find out how their mission, which is to end hunger and poverty while caring for the earth. They provide livestock and environmentally sound agricultural training to men and women and their families around the world. One of the things that always interests me, Allison, about people who go to work for organizations like this, such as yourself and many of the other nonprofits that I have the pleasure of interviewing, what did you do before you came to Heifer International?
That's a very interesting question. I'm not sure that I've been asked that on an interview. So I've always been in the public relations world. Prior to this, I actually worked in the United States Air Force. I as a public affairs officer, and am currently serving in the Arkansas Air National Guard part-time. So I've always been an advocate for organizations I'm passionate about.
Are you a pilot?
No, I still do the same thing, public relations for the Air Guard, as well as public relations for Heifer.
It's lovely.
Yeah, you know, as a personal story, though, I will say that I watched, my father grew up as a farmer, a smallholder farmer, if you will, in central Pennsylvania, and he is an older man, or as an adult, went back and bought the family farm, and we lived there for a period of time when I was in middle school and grew. We had corn and had a couple head of cattle, and I really saw how much how hard it was. It was really hard work, and
it
he
is.
Wasn't even doing it for full-time employment. But just how we were able to sustain ourselves. I didn't actually purchase meat from the grocery store until I became an adult. So
fascinating.
I was spoiled, yes.
No, well, I like what you all, I like your insight about the world and the way the world works in terms of how Heifer International has grown over these seven decades. I mean, 70 years is a long enough time to know that something does or doesn't work. And obviously it does. And I just love it's a beautiful understanding that most of the world's food comes from these little small farms. I remember when I interviewed Lester Brown of World Watch, we had this discussion. He's written this beautiful book about, I can't remember what it's called, something empty plates full. Anyway, it's about the food supply in the world. And I remember in our discussion, he said, we now only have a 7-day supply of grain for the world, a 7-day world grain supply. And my thought at the time was, well, that's nuts with all of the earth changes and lack of dependability in the weather. And so when I hear that Heifer International helps so many millions of people come into being able to, you know, not only give themselves food, but help the community grow their own food with their own livestock and their own grain and their own schools, it's just such a beautiful, wholesome, complete service that you all offer.
We're so lucky. Again, going back to Dan West, of course, his vision was so simple and uncomplicated. And even living in today's world where things are a little bit more complicated, Heifer International tries to maintain what we do and what we do well. And in the areas that perhaps we need help, meaning it's not our expertise, we work with great partners in the field. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that there are some U.S.-based NGOs that we work with in the field that maybe in the United States would people might think of us as competitors. And one comes to mind is World Vision.
Mm-hmm.
I just read a story about biogas digesters that we're putting in Rwanda. And Heifer International we implement one piece of that aspect, that project, and that's the training and care. And World Vision implements another piece of that project, which is actually the materials. So you take the waste from an animal and you turn it into something positive for the family, which in this case can be electricity, as well as a great fertilizer for their crops. And you have a full piece of as we talk about, you know, the economics of farming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the animal produces this manure. It can be used so that women and girls don't have to go collect wood and then have wood-burning stoves, which is terrible for their own system, their own inhalation system. And now they have electricity in which to study by. So we really look at a full system of people and organizations that can work together. And oftentimes, Heifer International can act as the convener of that group,
mm-hmm.
Based on our years of experience and history. And then other times, we can just be a part of a really wonderful program that's already in place.
How many people work worldwide for Heifer International directly?
I don't know the answer.
On staff in this country?
So in this country, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 150, maybe give or take. Because what we do, in addition to having our headquarters staff, as I mentioned, we have learning centers that are fully functioning farms. And so we have staff there that work as educators and outreach. And then we have several people that we call our community engagement coordinators. And, you know, people really want to be involved with an organization like Heifer International, and we want to be where they are. So it's where we get our grassroots support. So we'll have what we call CECs in the Baltimore area, in Washington, D.C., in Chicago, in Seattle, in many parts of California, so that you actually have a person on the ground that can organize meetings or attend different types of civic groups and really talk about our mission from a personal vantage point,
mm-hmm.
so you can feel even more connected.
That's lovely. What's your budget, just out of curiosity?
That's the part that's always the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, we're more than a $100 million organization.
Wow.
And fully, you know, we're very fortunate, again, because it's our donors. We have seen individual donations from people over generations. We have a lot of corporations, of businesses that care, that give our annual budget. So we're very humbled by the generosity of our donors and investors.
Well, again, you know, I think when an institution, I'm also on several boards over the years and on some mm-hmm. foundations. And, you know, I know when we look for organizations to give to, you want to know that most of it is going to service and not overhead. And it's such a beautiful model that you all have of this decentralization that has obviously shown the way, and hopefully USAID and other just enormous structures that go into foreign aid around the world have learned something from Heifer International's great success, because it is a great model.
We're very lucky. Just as you mentioned, USAID and some of the other larger funders have been generous to us over the years. But again, we really look to our individual donors. I can't tell you how many times I've had an opportunity to talk with people on the phone who are trying to make donations or want to tell their story. And it's really about a one-to-one. People here in the United States and certainly around the globe want to help people. You mentioned the price points. You know, every little bit goes to that mission of helping farmers feed themselves and their families. So,
is there any particular, we have about 5 minutes left. Is there any particular stories you'd like to share with us that come to mind, Allison, that you think, wow, this was just an amazing experience?
I would take you and your listeners on a journey to Peru. I had the fortune of going to visit Peru and talk with some of our farmers down there, most of which were females, and they live high in the Andes and are working with alpacas. And alpacas are a very adorable animal as long as they don't spit at you, and they tend to do that. But they are wonderful for creating beautiful artist, you know, scarves and gloves, hats, all kinds of wearables. And what we were really impressed by is, one, the interest by these female farmers to take this alpaca fiber and weave and construct it into a wearable that they wanted to sell online. And so they were creating global markets high in the Andes Mountains using computers. So they would go to, you know, an area, maybe like a marketplace that had a computer, and they would identify different patterns and construct the garments in such a way, and they would put them on mannequins and take pictures and then upload them to Facebook and then be able to sell their wearables in a global market. And Heifer, we worked with one of the farmers, or a group of them rather, but kind of one point person, to import several of these garments, so a lot of gloves, scarves, hats, and we were able to sell them to our audience. So we put them in our catalog and our magazine, and they sold out in record time. And I just love that story of connecting these women who are working hard in Peru to people here in the United States who now get to feel even more connected because they're wearing a beautiful scarf or a beautiful hat.
Mm-hmm. No, it's so interesting what some of this technology has enabled across the world, and so it brings us all so much closer, and hopefully in such good ways. You know, one of the things that interests me so much is your youth programs for youth in this country, and you've talked about them already, both in terms of the reading program and then important birthdays or ceremonies, graduations, or weddings, that when people can actually commemorate their own lives by doing something that is so predictably successful for somebody else's life. And I guess that's one of the things that I honor about Heifer, is that it's predictably successful. You can't say that about all nonprofit work in the world.
Well, I appreciate that compliment, and certainly will share it with the people I work with. And you're right. People really want to participate and share the special times in their life with others. And we have a brand new function and feature on our website called Fundraise for Heifer that tries to make it as simple and user-friendly for people to dedicate their birthdays or weddings or just fundraise for themselves, you know, to feel good about committing themselves to helping others. So I encourage people to go to our website and look up Fundraise for Heifer and see where they might get involved. And that can be anything from sending emails out to friends, or, you know, we can send different, you know, any type of item, as posters and pencils and things of that nature, because we know people can be motivated to help us.
That's wonderful. And are there also any, I didn't look to see if there are any YouTube snippets of some of the recipients of Heifer International's beautiful service?
Yes. In fact, if your listeners ever want to go to our website, when you go to the Join the Conversation tab, and then there is a social media tab, and it has links to our Vimeo and YouTube channels. And there you can hear directly from our project participants. One of my favorite videos, which is actually on our website, is Power Over Poverty. And that's a big statement for us. We want people to join us in this commitment to power over poverty. And it shows a lot of our family farmers in all places in the world. So from South America to Africa to Asia, it really humanizes what people are doing and how hard they're working to transform their lives.
Thank you so much for being with us, Allison. And thank everybody at Heifer International, www.heifer.org, an easy way to make a difference in the world.
You have more happy ever after,
I hope.
We can all hope fearlessly.
Stay connected with stimulating talk and breaking news on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio.